Hello, welcome back to another episode of the All Jazz Podcast. We have, like, again, I told you, always special guests here. I don't know, there's so many special people in my life, even if we met only a few times. But we have Martin Hansson from Sweden. Ooh. Yeah, we're not going to call him the sad clown anymore because he's done all sorts of other stuff in between. But it is an important thing in your life, that character.
Yes.
So welcome.
Thank you.
You know, like, I've researched a little bit because I knew you from the magic perspective. You talked a little bit more what you do in Sweden. We can talk about later about the university program and all that stuff. But immediately when you were at the Magic Amsterdam Magic Show, next to me being flabbergasted and let's say, what's the word when I was fanboying on Tom Stone, because that was an evening that you posted.
I thought you were going to say bored.
No.
I'm glad you didn't say bored.
No, I was fanboying, and Fritz remembers also, like, yeah, come on, you're embarrassing me here. But at the same time, I remember having so many great conversations with you, also quite late in the evening.
Yep. That was fun,
and that's where I really felt the first connection, and we kind of kept our private, not also the magic, but we haven't seen each other for more than, I think, 2 years now.
There was some kind of virus in the way.
Something happened, it's still going around.
I don't know what it was, but...
And you've gotten healthier, I see, in the meantime as well?
Yep.
What was that about? Were you like teased at home, or...
I was teased as a boy. I was getting older. The joints are starting to suffer really.
Yeah,
bad.
And you're a big person in general, huh? You need it.
Yeah, so I, to save my joints, my doctors told me that you will be in a wheelchair in 15 years if you don't do anything about this.
Good. So we don't have to go in specifics if you want, but you're healthier.
Yeah, so I decided to take care of the problem, which I still am.
It becomes a lifestyle now. Yeah. You have to live differently than you did before, and but beautiful, beautiful, my friend. I'm so happy to see you. Like, when you walked here in the sun, and unfortunately I couldn't pick you up, but you walked in the sun in your camouflage jacket.
Yes, I was trying to hide.
But you were quite successful because these trees here are quite matching today.
That's part of Swedish camouflage. You know, never be seen.
Oof. Beautiful. Now, what I want to start talking about first is, like, you know, you're a magician. We have here magician guests. I'm a magician, but... in reality, I want to meet the person always, you know, even in my private life when we meet magicians, I want to know the person.
Yep.
And that's why we got along with Fritz immediately, because he also doesn't like to hang out with anybody who's a magician if he wouldn't hang out with them if they're not a magician. It's kind of like a good rule to have.
Yeah, that's true.
And we had deep conversations already today. We kind of like used some material up, but we're going to try to bring some stuff back. The first thing I want to talk to you about before we go to your magic and how you maybe, like, the cliche story, how you started and whatnot, I want to point out one little thing I managed to find out that I didn't know before about your magic endeavors, and that is that you have, in fact, been pretty prominent the last 12 years or even more now, going to Japan, working with elderly people who have dementia.
Yes.
And that it actually works, and you're just trying to discover how and where and why you could apply this together with music treatment. And
yeah, it. That's a long story.
I'm gonna shut up now because I like to talk a lot. But this is also why I do this podcast, so I can learn to listen and go right ahead.
I don't know. 15 years ago, I was working as a bar magician in Stockholm, and I remember this day quite clearly. It was a Monday evening. We just opened up. And we open up for business, and this Swedish guy comes down there in the basement, and he says, "Do you have a table for six people?" And I go, "Yeah, sure, I'll fix it." And he goes, "Do you serve traditional Swedish food?" And I go, "Yes, we do." And he goes, "Yeah, I'll be back in half an hour." And this guy, whose name is Gustav Strandell, nowadays a very close friend of mine. Apparently, he lives in Japan, so he came down. He was back in Sweden with five Japanese friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they all work with elderly care, and they're doing research in dementia and Alzheimer's and stuff like that. And I was performing to them that night.
But you didn't know. Or the video I showed, I watched, or we can also show it later on, or just link it, is talking about you being surprised, but that you didn't know that you're going to perform for.
No. basically, what happened is that they said, we would like to take you to Japan. And I say, yeah, sure. Cool. So 1 week later, there was a ticket in the mail. And all I knew was that I was going to do 16 shows in 30 days. So I traveled to Japan. And I remember the first morning, they woke me up at 8 and said, okay, it's time to do your first show. And we had a big party the night I came. So I was a little
also
bit...
that. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
okay.
I was a bit hungover and jet-lagged. And so I said, okay, give me a half an hour.
Was that a first sign? What is it, a magic show at 8, 9 in the morning?
Yeah, I didn't really understand this, but I was like, okay, just do it. So, and I had my bag packed. You know, so I took a shower, you know, drank some water, brushed my teeth, and went like, whoa. And they picked me up, and they drove me down away for, I don't know, an hour, and we... down into this underground garage, and then into an elevator, and then up and into an office where I was served tea. And then they came and they said, you're on in 5 minutes. And I said, okay, how big is the audience? What am I doing? Am I doing close-up? Am I doing stage? And they go, no, you're doing stage. And I go, okay. And I brought my close-up stuff.
Oh my
so God. I was like, okay, how long am I performing? And they go, it's your choice. And I was
okay,
like,
okay, unusual.
Yeah, okay, so, you know, put on some stuff that I was thinking this could be, well, maybe not stage, but at least parlor size. And then I brought my bag and we went up and they opened the door and I came out on a stage and I hear my name in the loudspeakers and I look out and there's 200 Japanese people that are over 85 years old in wheelchairs.
Oh my God.
And I go,
what is
what?
This?
And I was just... I didn't really know what to do, but I knew I had to do something. So I was thinking, okay, just go, you know.
Yeah, try something.
Just do it. And
what was your first instinct? What in the mind?
My first instinct is to look where this Gustav Strandell is standing, and I saw him in the back, and I looked at him, and I went, "What?" And he just laughed. Right?
You were set up, actually.
I was set up.
Let's see you do perform now, magic.
And
boy.
I was okay. So let's do it. And I had a translator with me, Noriko, on stage, who also spoke a little bit Swedish, which was good. So I could actually tell her in Swedish very fast that I have no idea what I'm doing right now.
So you could sneak it in,
yeah.
In between. Yeah.
And she said something very important to me. She said, well, there's a bunch of people here with dementia and Alzheimer's. So don't ask them to remember a card.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's true. So I started by doing simple stuff. I made a silk disappear. I did some SpongeBob things, you know, visual things all the time. And I remember I had this very, very old man. It turns out he was a World War II veteran or something like that. And he was in the front row. And he was laughing so hard. And he was following, pointing, saying things that I naturally couldn't understand. But and I did my show. I think I did about 15 minutes. And then I sort of ran out of material. I knew I could have done more, but I would have needed to prepare stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I was.
You're no Max Maven.
No,
or a mentalist in general.
No.
Mentalists could be able to maybe pull off an hour show.
Yeah.
But also not with that crowd, probably, yeah?
No, with that crowd, it was very, very different. Wow. I had to work
and
hard.
What happened then afterward? You had some realizations about...
Yeah, the point is that just afterwards, I was invited up to the hospital boss, because this was a hospital, sort of. And... they served me tea, and he started talking, and it turns out his first question was, how did you do it? And I said, what, do you mean the magic? And he goes, yeah, but... And then they explained to me that this person in the front row had been, as they described it with the Japanese word, I can't remember, he's been a vegetable for 4 years. He hasn't made...
No reactions. Yeah.
Like this. And now, all of a sudden, he was there. And they asked me about the secret, and I said, I don't know.
Wow.
I have a hungover. I don't know where I am.
I don't know what's happening here.
I have no idea what happened. And so they thanked me a lot, and I got a lot of nice gifts and stuff and things. And we went back, and we went out for dinner with the guys who brought me there, including Gustav.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking about this, and we came to a couple of conclusions. For example, my sponge balls and my silks are red, the color red.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, that's very good. And I go, why? And it turns out that red is one of the colors that sort of really shines through dementia.
Mm.
So very often, I think it's a Swedish invention, they are, you can see in the home of people with Alzheimer's or dementia. And I have to tell you guys, I'm not an expert in Alzheimer's or dementia. So
if
I make some mistakes here,
I personally will do research as far as, because it's important to my wife as well. She does a lot of mental health performances as well. So
anyway, what I learned was that very often they paint red stripes on the floor leading to the bathroom, and they paint the toilet red.
Okay.
Because if you have dementia or Alzheimer's, you forget to go to the bathroom. Accidents can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But once you see this red, which is a sort of strong signal, you follow it, you see the toilet, which is red, and you think, toilet, oh yeah, I need to go to the toilet.
Wow, smart.
So stuff like that. So apparently red is something that
triggers something.
And I remember that dinner quite well. We were sitting there with the doctors and stuff and people, and they were all asking me, and I didn't know, and I was, well, I think that... And I came into the subject of misdirection, and I realized that the misdirection laws that we use in magic actually works a lot for people with dementia and Alzheimer's.
They can follow the magic, and
they can follow the magic. We can misdirect because it's sort of a ground. It's sort of a ground rule that. For an example, a hand that's a movement upwards is more noticeable than a movement downwards, and forward beats backwards and stuff like that. You know all this. And out of that, they started to discuss how they should develop this. And I said, excuse me, but are all my 16 shows going to be for dementia? And they said, well, actually, we changed your schedule. You're not doing 16 shows. And I go, oh, cool. And they said, you're doing 42. And I go, in 30 days. And they say, yes, but you have 3 days off. I was like, what?
In between, squeeze even more in between.
Yeah, and I did also a lot of corporate gigs when I was there. But I did maybe 20 performances for
this
people.
Type of audience.
Yes.
Okay.
And I know a lot of magicians who would say that, oh, that's a boring audience. But I got sort of captivated in it. I saw something happening that I will never experience with a sort of ordinary audience.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating. And just the idea that I have to be crystal sharp in what I do and what I say. I think that gave me also a better perspective of me as a performer. That was quite...
That's amazing because my wife is, like I told you before, I didn't explain too much, and also we haven't talked in the podcast. Come to me, jump. We are she's been dealing with anxiety ever since the second birth, and there was a lot of, you know, discussions before. We didn't even talk about this stuff in Slovenia. You know, the culture is kind of more, it's a lot of taboo, and whenever something, even my grandfather in the last, you know, about 5 years in the end, although he passed away from cancer complications, but it was, there was a lot of dementia going on. And they actually, when I was that age, I was like, what is that now? 10 years ago, they still kind of like talked about, well, he's not okay, you know, just leave him alone. Like there was no, like, he was more like pushed to the side, and there was no talking about how to deal with a person like that. Or because it's a lot of, you know, a lot of times with dementia, people around are suffering quite a lot. and maybe dementia, when they come back to it, they suffer, but a lot of times the people around. But that is really important to us. So I hope we can kind of, maybe you and Petra can talk more and find a way how to cooperate. And
it is interesting. I've had a lot of discussions also with my friend Gustav, who's still in Japan and still working. He appears sometimes on Japanese national television, and
he's the guy in the video that spoke Japanese.
He yells at the Japanese politicians because they're not taking care of their elderly and stuff like that. And it's also, I find it, I mean, dementia and Alzheimer's is like, that's a plague, and it's tough shit.
Yeah, dude.
And if we can find ways of working with it, no matter if it's by medication, by therapy, by magic.
Closeness with people.
And I know also one thing that I learned was that a lot of the treatment for elderly people with Alzheimer's and dementia is they massage, they contact massage, mm-hmm. like this. Mm-hmm. So I started doing my magic like that. I let them touch all the silks. I let them, sponge balls in their hands. Video, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Amazing, yeah.
And all that was like very, very, very
helpful and conductive to. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And it was.
So how many times have you gone back and forth to visit Japan? Because you mentioned that in that video that I watched, in that presentation that you did, that you have traveled back.
Yeah, I've been 14 times.
14 times? 14 times. So that's okay. And every time now when you go is for this reason, to work with dementia?
I think I've been there for that reason maybe 10, mm-hmm. 11 times. And then I've been to... I've also been in Japan practicing Aikido, which is one of my my weaknesses, I usually say, my soft spots.
It's a part of your lifestyle already. You live it. It's like you mentioned before. You don't plan it. You don't talk about doing it, and you just do it.
It's just something I do. I've done it since I was, I think, 8 years old.
Eight years?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I've been at it for 41 years now. So now it's more of a...
And immediately, like you said, immediately when you say Aikido, like me in my old teenage years, I'm immediately thought of Steven Seagal, of course. That was the first thought because I'm a 90s kid in the 90s. But beautiful art, because I was always like mesmerized by, you know, that idea of... Because I didn't research a lot about it, never practiced it, but the idea of using their force and just kind of redirecting... That was beautiful to watch with sometimes these masters.
It's fun because a lot of people ask me, "Yo, this Aikido, what is it about? What do you do?" And I go, "Well, we're a bunch of people that meet up in a basement early in the morning. We roll around and then we go have coffee." You know, and
I don't really similar to jiu-jitsu. They also say we roll around and then we have coffee.
Yeah,
but the jiu-jitsu guys smoke weed a lot. I heard.
Yeah. Well, I think it doesn't really matter what you do, as long as you move your body. If you want to go dancing, go dancing. Yeah. If you want to do martial arts, do martial arts. If you want to do whatever you do, just make it a habit to do it.
Stay active,
Because I remember all these years when I was mostly doing the morning practice at 5:30 in the morning. And to get your ass kicked Monday morning 5:30 by old men is...
Not a good start of the day.
Well, it is a good start of the day afterwards.
You get stronger mentally.
If you start to think about that, well, you go to practice in Sweden when it's minus 30 degrees outside and you need to walk to the dojo, you need to just shut down and just go just something I do. You know, I wake up and I go to practice and I go,
But that's a powerful, you know, message for young people and anybody who's, you know, like... avoiding, you know, physical, because I was very active always as a teenager. Then suddenly there was a switch and I was like the art, guitar, whatever. And I was like, and now with my kids growing up, I had to start, especially with my older one being a teenager, and he's also fallen out of sport now again. Like, hey, let's stay active. You want to keep your dad healthy? Come run with me or do something.
And it's funny because we have this idea about in the Western part of the world martial arts. First of all, we think that martial arts is for fighting, right? You see kids discussing which martial art is the most effective. And I usually say, well, if you compare other sports, you would never say which one is most effective, basketball or soccer. I mean,
that's a very good. I never heard that analogy before. Very good.
It's just we do what we do.
Because I'm guilty of this. I'm a fan of MMA, like I told you, and watching for the last few years. But like I say, I'm conflicted between wanting to see beautiful techniques executed and people who are in control of their bodies, just like, you know, like gymnastics or whatever. And also gymnastics, people can get really hurt doing that extreme. You're kind of dancing on this extreme edge of what's possible, you know, like. But then you get to the brutal part of it, and it's like sometimes because they have to, you know, finish each other, or somehow it's like, oh my God, then you see blood, and oh my God, and then breaking arms, that rarely happens, but it happens, or somebody kicks a shin and they check the kick. And
yeah, it's. But it's also like, I don't know, it's, for me, it's, I think it's so easy. People very often come down to the dojo. And they ask me, or one of my teachers, whatever it is, that they ask, like, okay, so what's the most effective technique you have? And we go like, what?
Why?
Depending on, I don't know, what? You know, because they want to have a quick fix. And if they can't learn to be fighters in a week, they're quitting. But the problem is that it's so easy to hurt somebody else. I mean, it's, you don't have to practice to hurt somebody. It's, on the other hand, it's really difficult how to heal people. And I think that's what martial arts should be about. Building better people.
And when you practice this,
that's the true art.
That's really good. Because I also, I did karate when I was young, and it was taught to me that the reason why I'm learning is to learn also how to avoid and how to just stay in control of your emotions. And that was just the basic teaching there. But it was something that stayed with me for a long time. And even though I don't practice any sort of fighting or even now training or whatever, it has stayed the appreciation or the just the kind of like life skills and some lessons that I got, you know, also like that I don't want to fight when I first time when they made this katana and they're like, let's, you know, you're going to kick and, you know, you have, and then I got a kick to the body and I just kind of obviously got a liver shot because my body just shut down.
Ouch.
That's never good, but it was just, you know, experience that for me is like, look, I respect this, but I'm not willing to fight or I'm
Also imagine people that are competing in Olympic, let's say bow and arrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
In archery. I rarely think people walk up then and say, is this, so you're practicing to shoot at people. How can that be? Is it effective? What kind of?
Yeah.
No, we shoot at, we don't.
Maybe maybe to catch an animal. If I
But I mean, archery is a martial art. It comes from the war. And it's the same with the Japanese Budo arts, and I guess all of them. That
sword arts. And
They're no longer meant to. We don't need that.
Especially, what are you going to do against nuclear weapons or tanks? And
that's a problem.
They could fight it out in the old days.
Yeah, I think that whatever you do, just, you know, practice. I know my teacher in Japan, Yasuo Kobayashi Sensei. He said he often gets the question of, is there an inner secret of learning Aikido? What's the secret? Because we think in the Western world there must be a secret. It's always a secret. And he usually looks at them and he says, the secret is keiko, 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 which means practice.
Sometimes I tell my younger students the same thing, especially the beginner ones. It's like, there's three rules in magic or anything you want to do in life, which involves skill or getting better. Practice is the first one. Remember that.
Yeah.
Second one, practice. Like, you just keep doing it. The third one, so they get it. It's like, come on. It's like, and then if they don't, and if you pinpoint that you don't say, oh, you're doing well, you're doing great. Yeah, you have to motivate them, but then also be like, look, like, you should be here then now. If you've done a little bit, like 5 minutes, 3 days a week, you would have held the cards or whatever, the way I've sent you a short video. But it is what it is, you know, like some, but it's important for me to people, to especially young kids, to understand that it's not this trick and the secret and the simplicity of some things, and it's magic.
It's interesting. One of my favorite magicians in the world, Doc Eason, I'm going to quote him, where he says, it's not the trick, it's not the trick, it's not the trick. Boom.
Yo, man, I just, you know, this is very, it makes a lot of sense right now to also mention this, but I wrote my first kind of small article for a magazine, a magic magazine that Rico is doing, a free one. It's called I Practice Magazine. Check it out on the Invisible Practice page. He asked me to write about something, and I was like, what should I write about? And I was like, I think I want to write about, I just at that time reread some excerpts from Our Magic, from Mescaline and Levine, and from 18 somewhere. And in the intro, he says something like, I actually put it in a quote in the beginning of the article. And I started with this quote, and it's like, that he hoped in that time, that was 1880, that's 130 years ago, this magician and the other guy, they philosophized and talked, and he said, well, our hope is in the future, in the near future, every common man on the street will know that the tricks are to the magician the same as the mask and the powder and the wigs are to the actor, and how to get that there. It's not through commerciality of magic and making more magic tricks, although I'm a part of that commercial market, and it has to be there, but it's just like, oh, where's the school system? Why are we not trying to put this into the schools? Primary after school activity, at least, like we're doing here in the European school, or what you guys are trying to do to bring it into university programs, which is also something we maybe want to touch upon. Maybe it's the right time. We're almost kind of halfway.
Yeah, sure.
If you want to touch on to another big part of your life has been the Mystique group in Sweden. I don't want to talk too much about it. It was because you are the expert, but Tom Stone and you and who else? Leif?
Well, it started up like this. We had, six, 7 years ago, Tom Stone and Johan Ståhl, two quite known magicians for those of you in the business, decided to bring magic to the university. So we had couple of courses in the Swedish Dance and Circus University. And I think we got people from 11 different nations, and we were having courses of 6 weeks as a tryout, and it got really well.
Which year was that?
Oh, this must be 6-7 years ago.
Okay.
Maybe even more. Can't remember. Time. I'm old now. Time flies.
Time flies. Yeah.
And we learned a lot. And it was not only, we had Tom Stone as our head teacher who taught us a lot, but it wasn't only that. It was more of also a research. We started researching everything from misdirection, and to perception vectors, things like that, really advanced. And what happens if we do this instead of that in magic? What happens if?
Testing stuff as well.
Testing stuff.
Trying to make a curriculum and find the way to...
Yeah, we got this really, really absurd little drills that we were paired up, maybe 2, 3, or 4 people. And these are the conditions. You're going to use these techniques. For an example, you're going to do crossing the gaze 2 times and then 1 time wrong. And the subtext is going to be, the inspector is coming.
Okay.
And boom, boom, boom.
Okay.
And you make up a magic routine. You got 45 minutes.
Beautiful. So that's already sounds way more different than, when classical thinking of like traditional, either go through a method or make up an effect. And then this is just like you're taking a structure of a dramatic sequence that you would like. You're putting some subtext into it and some theory.
And see what happens.
Yeah.
And but then also we have to remember that everybody that joined these classes had done at least 5, 6, 7 years of
professional performing.
Professional performing. And
they've studied them before. They need to be on a certain level.
Needed to be on a certain level. And it was fascinating. But once we have done this, I remember a year after, I called Tom and I said, we should do something. This is, I'm bored. I want to do something. And he said, yeah, we should do something. So we called two other guys, my very good friend Leif Olberius, whom I've been working with for the last 25 years.
Hey, Leif, miss you too.
Yeah.
Nice to really come back soon.
And we also brought in John Henry Larsson, a very good magician and extremely good builder of stuff. A technical wizard. And we got together. I remember the day we had coffee in our favorite coffee place. And And we decided to do something strange. And Tom came up with a basic idea that was, what happens if we create a show, 1.5 hour show from scratch in 30 days, and then we play it only once, and then we throw it away.
Mm.
And then we take the next 30 days.
I don't know if you're into stand-up comedy, but George Carlin used to do that. I don't know. He wrote a piece and threw it away. Yeah. It's gone.
Kill your darlings.
Exactly.
And we decided to keep on doing this for 3 months. And we didn't stop. We did 4 years. And yeah, it's been quite stressful to produce a totally new show every, you know. Yeah. And then what we did was that we brought in guest artists. We never took any money from this project. All the money went back into the project and to bring guest artists. And we had, we had them all from Faye Presto, Miguel Munoz, Javi Benitez. We've had Wolfgang Moss. I don't know. Everybody's been there, basically. And basically what we told them is that you can do whatever you want.
Mm.
And it's a non-profit thing. So basically, we kept it on a low budget. Everybody, our guest artist, has been so nice, eagerly and willingly supporting this. Thank you so much for those of you who are seeing this.
Yes.
And it's been a good journey. But what we did with Mystique was that we sort of started bending, I wouldn't say the rules, because I don't think there are any rules.
Yeah.
But bending the normal way. We took very old tricks and we did them in a completely new way.
You want to talk about that exercise here and openly, or rather in the Patreon episode?
Would be more for the Patreon.
Yeah, this is more technical stuff.
It's more technical stuff. But you could say that we put up a couple of ground rules that we're going to try to do our magic with as much as possible on at least 2, 3, or 4 people. So not doing solo performances, but we want to do a group thing out of it. And we also decided that it would be interesting to see if we don't talk. Mm-hmm. We do everything to music. And to see how much can we communicate with the audience without talking.
Yeah.
And it turns out, in my opinion, and I think the other guys as well, that we are communicating better without talking.
Yeah, you know.
It gets a completely different way of communication.
Teller would agree. Teller would agree.
You need to work with your body and work with your eye movements.
I like what Teller said. And I don't know where.
That's a contradiction in terms, what Teller said.
What Teller said, but he said it somewhere. I think it was the masterclass or somewhere in where I heard him talking on a podcast somewhere, in a sense that this. It's not always easy to describe, but how can you take, you know, something that you, when you start talking too much, like even in like regular life, the story that you're trying to tell somebody gets, every time you say something and it's like double, it can be taken differently, or your body says something and you're not paying attention to how you're, you know, with your body. And when you stop doing all this and talking, which I do a lot, you know me on stage, there's if you want to really tell a story and they don't know where it's going, it's like they have to follow you along. The more you say, the more you give them, the more they can go their own way around. It's an interesting concept, but it's so hard to pull off, like you said.
It is hard to pull off, but in the same time, we have to remember that as my dear friend Leif, who is also not only a very extremely talented magician, and a good friend, but also a very, very prominent actor.
Mm.
As he would say, which is true, everything tells a story.
Mm.
All your props tell a story. Your clothes tell a story. Your eye movements tell a story. Everything tells a story.
Now that you reminded me, I have to rep my own gear.
So everything tells a story, and we have to remember that. Because
for those not listening, I took off my T-shirt. I have my merch just for myself. Nobody can buy it yet.
Oh,
but guests will get it in the future when they come. Whoa!
Finally, yes. Go to Holland, they said. You'll have a T-shirt, they said. Oh yeah, cool. So no, everything tells a story, and it doesn't necessarily. It can be your body language. Can be everything tells a story, and you need to get your pieces together because if your body tells one story. right? And and your eyes tell another story, or your verbal communication tells another story. It gets sort of mixed up.
Yeah, it's muddled. And with the same with me, because I have a lot of energy. I had to learn how to, I'm still learning, trying to get better at like framing and focusing my energy on stage. One is the pacing around, which I love, like, but not in the way if it's not controlled, but it's like back and forth, but with a purpose and stopping and looking and going back and forth. I like dynamics, but it's like really been always too much for my side, and I had to learn from either the director that worked with me, Ria Marx, thank you so much. She worked with Hans Klok as well. I was lucky enough to have somebody who had experience working with a magician on stage, and she was like, hey, Balyash, you need to, like, when you're like this, the frame is like this big on stage. You want them to see this and that, open up your body. That's the frame now, you know, and that kind of stuff. And when you learn diverse things like that, and that's why, I don't know, historians, I don't know if you heard, they call it the magic is the queen of the arts, which is kind of coming from a magician. You'd never want to say that. It's like, well, who are you, to pretentious bastards?
Yeah, that's true.
But it is like kind of, it's not only all arts, it's just also science. We try to learn as much as we can how to make the magic atmosphere come out.
You need
and
to have a lot of skills.
Yeah.
I know, but then on the other hand, you also need to know your limits. For example, you mentioned the sand clown. The sand clown is the name of
award-winning act.
Woohoo!
I plugged it because you know, are you like me? Probably you don't want to. And somebody has to say it. It's in the
book. Somebody has to say it. Yeah.
Yes.
I started creating an act 9 years ago. It's still not.
I was
really
lucky enough
finished,
to see it about 3-4 times here in the Amsterdam show.
And it's still developing. I've never been never been into competitions in magic. But then Tom Stone, the bastard, fooled me into getting into the Swedish championships.
I don't want to hear this, what you say, because they've been like talking to me about it. You need to go to competition. Yeah.
But it was good. So I did the Swedish championships and did pretty well. I won the Grand Prix, which was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided, I might as well try Next Edge. I went to the Nordic Championships, which is Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland. And
crushed it.
Yeah, I got the Grand Prix, which was crushed amazing. Amazingly funny. And then I was competing in Blackpool on the International Close-Up Magician of the Year and didn't win. Do Ki Moon from Korea won. Excellent act. That was like, wow.
Props to him.
Yeah, oh yeah. Jesus Christ, that was good. And then I went to the European Championships in Manresa.
And that was when?
In July this 2021.
2021.
And I got third place in Parlor.
Yeah.
And
amazing. That's amazing. Because people don't understand how strict and also conservative, and also like you have to know what these people want. Also, it's not just it's your act, but you do want to apply certain things.
Yeah. But my point is also that creating this act I could never have done it alone. Never, ever. Not a chance in the whole world. I've been using.
You hear young magicians?
Yeah.
Listen to this. It's a real world advice.
I also got advice that what I did was that I gathered a team around me of not only because that they are professional, but people that I can work with, people that I can trust, people that I like, people that I want to go out and have a cup of coffee with,
like
people
we said
I
in the
can
beginning.
Call when I'm having a bad day, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of them was Tom Stone, who's helped me enormously with the magic part and the construction of the magic part, the form. And also the misdirection. Leif Olberius, who's done, the acting part.
Acting,
and the acting is a huge part of the Sad Clown Act. It's really important. We have...
Especially with all the silence.
Yeah, since I'm only doing it to music and need to work with the eyes and the movements of the body and stuff. And John Henry Larson, all the guys in the Mystique. John Henry's helped me a lot with... the man is, you know, he's got a zillion ideas. And he knows how to build them all.
Wow.
it gets too much sometimes. And you go, wait, stop. And Mickey Askenas, a very, very good builder, also helped me with a lot of stuff and a lot of ideas. Andreas Sebring from Metal Writing, it's helped me a lot.
You need to get me all these like stuff that I can put them like links or whatever. You will get it in order afterwards.
We will. Without them, this would never have been possible because. And also, when I went, for an example, to Blackpool to compete, I had help from Nicola Arcane, Otta Kramer,
so the partner of Tombstone.
Yeah, because they were there and helped me fixing the lights, asking me, let me get you a bottle of water because I didn't have the time to run off and do it. And that was a relief to have that team. Because you were so stressed in the situation.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when I went to Manresa, I was completely alone. And that was, you got your 10 minutes to do your tech.
Mm.
And I learned the night before I was scheduled to perform that it was a leaning stage, 4% leaning.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's unusual.
And I do a cup and ball routine.
Oh, no.
And I didn't really know how to handle this. So I got in the morning and half an hour earlier than everybody else trying to rebuild the table. In the same time, I was doing my tech to two technicians. They needed a translator and I wasn't really sure, did they get that, the cues.
Mm-hmm.
If I had had my crew with me, I would have sent somebody to the tech booth, to run through all that, and somebody would have taken care of this. And all I would have done is to make sure my props are where they are.
Yeah, which
and
is
that's,
enough.
That's an advice if you're going to compete. Get your team together, bring some friends, let them help you because you cannot do it alone.
I mean, you could, but you're drowning and things go wrong anyway. Yeah. And it's like the chances that they go wrong, they're much higher.
You get so stressed.
And then you get in this kind of situations, a leaning stage where I've never seen that before. But
it's some sort of opera thing. It's a little bit leaning. But and I spoke to the people in charge of the competition. I said, why didn't you tell me this? And they went like,
should have asked.
Should have asked, So, okay, that's also a lesson learned.
Chalk it up to the learning curve,
So now I'm preparing to go to to the big world championships in Quebec in July 2022.
July 2022, how do you see then, how do you start? Do you have a time frame where you begin? Because you're still building, you're working on the act, but start training like before to really get to...
I would never stop practicing. After European Championships, I actually didn't touch the act for a month.
Okay.
I needed holiday because I've been working with it so intense for 9 years.
Yeah.
5 years. I've been working with it for 9 years, but intense for 5 years.
You need to
years.
Also let things breathe. Yeah. Did you see the act differently when you came back after a month?
Yeah, I did because I needed to change a few parts. Mm-hmm. I needed to add a few parts. Mm-hmm. And I'm adding it right now. But now the problem is that the act is, which is now 8 minutes, 37 seconds, it's so planned that if I change anything in the beginning, it will create problems in the end.
Nah.
And people very often, I meet
fine
magicians.
Swiss watch.
Yeah. Fine watch goes like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And people say to me, look, this effect, you should take this effect and put it in your act. And I go, it's a great effect. But that would change my whole story because everything is telling a story. And then I need to, so I can't just put anything in just because it's good magic.
It's not like you have like an act like most of us have at the Amsterdam Magic Show where you're like, oh, I have this trick that how to connect maybe a bit emotionally together, but it's like not like one continuous storyline and that has a curve and then ends.
I need to look at my character and I need to ask, and my character is the sad clown. Basically, the act is about the man who turns around to the audience and he's got a red nose and he's a clown and he doesn't want to be a
clown.
But
you start behind stage, like as if you're behind stage.
Yeah, I'm coming out from another
show and they're getting to see you behind the stage.
Yeah, they're getting to see me backstage.
What happens to you emotionally and...
Yeah, and all I want to do is get rid of the red nose.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a clown anymore. And in the end, I still have to put on the red nose. So, and that's also part of a thing that we worked a lot within Mystique, and that is, does magic necessarily have to be funny? Does it necessarily have to be the big happy ending thing where everybody's laughing? And we say no.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of really dark things.
Great, man. Great. There needs to be like diversity, and because mainstream will always be mainstream, but it's like mainstream can change if enough fringe things like this happen, and it's,
Yeah.
Beautiful. It's, like, it's, do you want to, like, because we talked about the videos from the Mystique, you want to include them in the public, just, and we'll not talk about too much technical stuff. We can tell the people who are listening what's happening, and those who are watching on YouTube will get to see a little bit of a small screen on the, but in the Patreon, you want to go a bit more technical through them and explain why. And
but if we should see something now?
Yes, yeah. let's do that. And we have either the Sign of Silk routine, Milk Mystery, or Cookies. What do you want?
Well, the Cookies is one of my favorites. Let me tell you the background story.
Yes.
This one was filmed in the Magic Castle in Hollywood. And I'm not on stage, but my two friends, John Henry and Thomas, and we decided to make a small piece about a cookie.
Mm-hmm. So we should start the act. And if you want to, just for our listeners who are listening, explain what, just the details, what's happening. Yeah. If you can, I'll maybe include a little bit of, here we go. That was in Magic Castle, right?
Yes.
Performance. Two guys. Oh. One has a silk. No. Was it a napkin?
It can be whatever you want.
But he makes it a napkin, huh?
Yeah, he makes it a napkin.
Okay. And there's Tom Stone on the right, watching confused. What is he doing? Oh, cookies. He's gonna... Hey, I have a silk.
Yeah, Tommy's hungry as well.
Yeah. And
desperately wants a cookie. And then John Henry, well, okay, well, you can have a cookie.
If you insist, yeah. So they take a bite of the cookie, both of them.
Yeah, and here's where the weird part starts.
Oh, Tom spits back his cookie to him. And it heals the cookie. It's restored.
John Henry restores Tom's cookie by spitting it.
And then they try to bite, but they're all disgusted by their own, so they switch the cookies. And now they completely...
Yeah. Oh, so now John Henry eats his cookie.
The whole cookie.
Yeah.
And Tom spits back the cookie. Okay. And John takes the cookie and eats the whole... No, it disappears from his hands. Oh. Hey. Two magicians at war. Tom just takes all of his cookies. Hey, that's not fair. Oh, okay, he's being reasonable.
And he gives back one cookie and steals all the others. And then steals the last cookie as well. Yeah.
Yeah, bastard, Tom. I love you.
And here we can see John Henry has failed utterly.
Huh.
Now Leif, normally you would make this, you know, a turnaround. So
and now a third person came in. Leif came in with a big, a little small suitcase or chest, treasure chest. He has a cookie.
Yeah, and he wants the cookie.
Of course.
John Henry wants the cookie, but Leif eats it.
Aww. And he's so nice to even take care of the crumbs.
John Henry can eat the crumbs. Yeah.
Oh, the crumbs. I didn't even notice that before. Oh, yeah, beautiful. That's the ending of this trick. There's no magic ending. There's basically an ending of confusion and some new storyline.
Yeah, and a guy being sad because he didn't get any cookies.
Yeah, wow.
But it's also a way of doing magic, you know? It's
And it's a it's a little trick we got to see in a couple of years ago. It came out. We call it the bite cookie.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can look it up, but it's not, but it's like, it's such a, these visual tricks are usually you should tell a long story, and then the trick that's visual and short, you should like make a long beginning to make it. Yeah. But in this way, you guys have made this one thing, which is usually 10 seconds long or 5 seconds long, and built a whole act. And we will discuss the actual structure and why and where it comes from. And it's not from magic. So, that will be in the Patreon, so subscribe there, follow us there. We appreciate all your support.
Yep.
You want to go and check out one last video, and then we'll kind of, let's say, then we're going to make an ending the conversation and end the discussion here. Which one would you like, the Sign of Silk or Milk Mystery?
I would go for the Sign of Silk.
Nice.
Because what we did with that was that we took a very standard disappearing silk trick that people normally do all by themselves.
Yes.
And we decided to see what
happens. A
classic
of magic.
Yeah, what happens if we do it more people,
mm-hmm.
and we build a pattern around it, which is, this is built on an old clown pattern, mm-hmm. ABA, ABB, ABC. We'll talk more about that.
Yes.
In the Patreon thing. And yeah, it uses a lot of misdirection. It uses a classic of magic,
mm-hmm.
and
Here we go. Check it out.
Yeah, it's interesting when there's more people. Yeah.
Let's see this. Sign of Silk by Mystique. Again, performed in the Magic Castle.
No, this is an Uppsala Magic Comedy. Yeah.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, you once told me this very good convention. Uppsala
Magic
Comedy.
So we see Martin on stage. There's a sign in Swedish. It says, "The Vanishing Silk." How do you say that? Pronounce that.
Den försvinnande duken.
Okay.
The Vanishing Silk.
The Vanishing Silk.
Or the Disappearing Silk, yeah. And I see the sign and I think, okay. Is that what I'm going to do? Okay. Do I have a silk? Yeah, I have a silk.
Oh, he has a silk in his pocket.
A red silk.
Who would have thought? A magician.
Who would have thought, yeah.
Pushes the silk in the fist. Classic. All the fingers go in there, push it, and you failed.
Yeah, I know, it doesn't disappear. I'm a lousy magician. And I turn around and I look at the sign again, you know.
Uh-huh.
But it says the disappearing silk.
It should work.
Yeah, it should work.
If the sign says so.
And I try it one more time.
Oh, come on, Martin.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. And it's these times of crisis you call for a friend, so I'm trying to get Leif out on stage. Because as I said, he's a wonderfully talented magician.
Yeah, please help, friend.
And then I show him.
Okay.
And I show him it doesn't disappear. And then we both look at the sign. Yeah, it says the disappearing silk. Okay, I'll try it one more time. And then Leif decides to look for himself. He sees the silk in my hand, and then
He takes it, shows you what to do.
Places the red silk in his hand, and it's gone, and it's back in my hand.
Yay! I hope just this doesn't take us off of the. Is this copyrighted music? Probably, yeah. We'll take care of it later if it's needed.
We'll and then Tom enters, and I show him. I show him, and now my silk is gone. And it turns out it's in Tom's hand.
Yeah, wow, now you made it.
Yeah, and then Tom tries it, and then I decide to take it from him, from his hand. And we look at it, and I place it in my hand. And now Tom opens his hand, and he's got a red silk. I have a red silk. We all have three have red silks.
What to do? Now all of you go.
Try it again. Into the hand. Push it into the fist. All three of us. And Tom. Tom's
success.
Gone. Mine's gone. And Leif has a yellow silk.
A yellow one.
And we all get really confused. And Leif leaves.
Leif is happy.
Yeah,
he got a good trick.
And then we look at the sign.
Oh, and it says the color-changing silk. Yeah. Pronounce that in Swedish.
Den färgändrande duken.
Okay. Yeah. We got the... Wow. Okay.
So
beautiful.
That's also a way of taking an old standard trick and sort of make it different.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we did enough of talking through the thing to not have the music pick up, and it's fine. Hey, this is great. Now, we don't want to push an hour if it's naturally not feeling an hour, so we're gonna end it here. Unless you wanted to talk more about, we've went through a lot of subjects from dementia, from your Japan, Aikido. You've really made a nice introduction. I hope you come back as soon as possible, and we'll see what we do then. We might discuss more things openly about other stuff, but in the Patreon, we're gonna go there now and have ourselves a great time. But if you're ready, come ready with your brain. He's gonna explain some misdirection concepts, and he's had a lot to share where he's, like he said, learned from Tom Stone and from acting and from, and there's some other concepts that might surprise you.
I think I hopefully will be able to explain it.
Yes, we'll try. That's always what we try. We try to be as clear with what we want to express, but you know, we're human, so we'll do our best. And for all of you checking us out again here on YouTube, thank you. Subscribe, like, all that stuff that we don't like to say, but please do it. It helps us in the algorithm. So we'll see you next time. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you, sir.